Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and a San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl T.
You guys, we are trying this Skype thing. Pearl's at home, and I'm here at the studio. We're trying this Skype thing. Fortunately, we won't be on with Pearl for too long. We've got a lot of pre-recorded interview for you guys, and this is going to be a wonderful episode, Pearl, because we've got Tony, Grammy, and Emmy winner Cynthia Erivo is going to be on with us. That's exciting, right?
Everyone's Cynthia Erivo.
And we also have Canadian pop star and out lesbian Rhea May is going to be on with us. We've been talking about that interview for a couple of weeks, and we will have her with us this week.
Right. Look at Pollo going across the international borders, y'all, for you guys.
Well, yeah, because Cynthia Erivo was in Japan when we did our interview.
She's
all over the place, and she's from Great Britain, so you guys are going to get a fun, fabulous accent from her, so we love an accent.
Yeah, I love an accent, girl.
So, Pearl, how did you spend your weekend?
What did I do this weekend? This weekend was kind of all over the place. I found out that the job that I have been trying to get, I didn't get. They gave it to somebody else.
Aww, I'm sorry.
I know, such a bummer, but it's all good in the neighborhood. They offered me a different position because they liked me. Unfortunately, I had to turn them down because it was not enough money for me. But other than that, I was at HSF, and then I also performed at the new brunch show, Bissot, I don't know how you say it correctly. It's a French-named spot out here in San Francisco. Pollo, you probably know the name of the place.
Yeah, Bissot. Bissot, it means kiss.
It means kiss, yeah. But and it's a very small space. I was kind of worried about how it was going to go down. But it still was really fun to do. So I did that on Sunday. And I hung out with Jamila Vanity Moore, Elena Moore, and Camille Toe for a little bit after the show, because we all had that show. Other than that, that's it.
Well, very cool.
What about you?
Well, Friday night I was in drag for the holiday party at the Lookout, and that was a lot of fun. I can't believe, I mean, you know, I've been with them.
I don't know if you guys follow Pollo on social media, but Pollo has been posting all her little Christmas shindigs on Facebook.
I sure have, and on Instagram too, y'all. And it was really sweet. I can't believe that I've been working with the Lookout for 10 years. It's, like, pretty crazy. I started working with them right after they opened. They just celebrated 10 years. And now this was, like, probably the 10th holiday party I've done with them. So it was really, really fun. It was a nice time. Everybody was happy and joyous and celebratory. And that was lovely. Then Saturday night, I put up my friend Vanessa Avenue. He's a member of Cheer San Francisco. His name is Jason Taylor, but his drag name is Vanessa Avenue. I put her in drag, and she looked fabulous, and she turned it out for Mascara, the sober drag show.
It looks like you took your face off and put it right on her.
It's funny that you should say that, because this morning, Landa came across a picture of Vanessa and sent me a text and said, "This looks just like you." And I said, "Well, I would hope, because I painted her."
Right. She just looks like a slightly buffer but skinnier version of Pollo.
And Landa, it's hilarious because Landa legitimately found a picture of me, I don't know from when, but where I had basically done the exact same eye on myself, and she just did them side by side, the eyes, like, above each other. It was pretty funny.
Uh-huh.
So Vanessa turned it out, and that was adorable. And it was also the debut. My friend did his first time ever performance in drag, and her name is hilarious to me. It's Taryn Uranus.
Oh, my God. My God, leave it to a goddamn drag queen.
Well, she was feeling her fantasy, honey. I mean, it was the bitch's first time in drag, and she showed up and she had ordered all this stuff online, and it was legitimately, like, she had a better setup than the professional drag queens who were in the show. I was like, all right, bitch, with your expendable income.
Right.
So, anyway.
I love seeing new people in drag for the first time because they get obsessed with themselves.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
So, and MGM Grand had done her makeup. Taryn had won a raffle prize at, remember we had gone to like a spiritual retreat a while back, and Taryn won this raffle prize where MGM did her makeup for her to help her make her debut, and she was just feeling the fantasy, honey, all of the fantasy, every last bit of it. So,
all right.
And then on Sunday, I was at Port Bar with Carne Asada, and that was super fun. I really enjoy doing the Port Bar. Those people are so nice. The audience is so nice. It's always fun to work with Carne, and I was in the show with Carne and Johnny Rocket. Normally, I'm in a show with Woo Woo Monroe, but it was a nice little switch up, and we had a really good time there. So that was how I spent my weekend, and of course, I'll be spending this week. I have a gig tomorrow afternoon, a corporate gig at, of all places, the fucking Oakland airport, girl.
But you know, Oakland has been changing so much. Like, there's so much more of us in Oakland now.
Yes, well, that's because everybody's getting run out of San Francisco. So everybody's,
yeah, exactly.
Everybody's getting run out of San Francisco, and therefore they're heading over to Oakland, and it's making life a little nicer over there for everyone involved. Right. I'm going to do this corporate gig at Oakland Airport tomorrow, and then I'll be getting ready for the weekend, you know, because I'm going to be hosting my big annual Christmas party on Christmas Day, my spaghetti dinner. Yeah, it's going to be...
Have you figured out your secret ingredient yet?
Say that again?
Have you figured out your secret ingredient yet?
No, I'll figure it out when I go shopping. Like, I always... So, Pearl's referencing the fact that every year at Christmas, I make spaghetti, and every year at Christmas, I add some new random ingredient to the spaghetti sauce. So we'll see what it's going to be this year. Last year it was Nopales, the Spanish cactus. Again, MGM Grand relentlessly makes fun of my spaghetti because she's real Italian, if you can't tell from that fucking honker. But she wants to take it upon herself to make fun of my spaghetti, which everybody loves, the bitch.
But girl, last year you had mayo in your spaghetti.
I think that was 2 years ago. It was delish. I think it was 2 years ago that there was mayo in the spaghetti. You guys,
I'm pretty sure it was last.
If you're listening, the spaghetti is delish, and don't judge it based on the ingredients. Judge it based on the flavor. So, anyway,
okay, girl.
If you are in the greater,
yeah, I think it's hilarious.
Go ahead,
Landa never has the spaghetti.
Well, I don't know. I think it's because the reason she actually doesn't eat much when she comes over. Because almost invariably, they're going to be going to Miso's parents' house. And they're going to go see Miso's mom. And therefore, they probably have to eat there. It's probably a requirement. So, I don't think it has to do as much with her sort of vetoing or boycotting the spaghetti. But if you are in the Greater Bay Area and you do not have plans on Christmas Day, or you would like to join... Oh, fuck. It just hung up on Pearl. Or you would like to join us on Christmas Day. Are you there, Pearl?
What'd you say?
Oh, I thought it hung up on you. So, and I was just continuing on with my story. If you'd like to join us on Christmas Day, hit me up on Facebook, you guys. You can find my Facebook page at Pollo Del Mar Fans. So it's facebook.com, Pollo Del Mar Fans. And I would be happy to have you join us. And I would be more than happy to welcome you into my home on Christmas Day. This is the 12th year in a row that we've done our annual Christmas open house. And I feel like, I say our, it's definitely my event because it's in my home, but there's so many people who come every single year and they look forward to it all year long, and it feels like
you guys don't spend Christmas alone if you don't have to.
Yeah, definitely don't. And you know, if you are in the Bay Area, you don't have to, because you can spend it with all of us, and it's a fucking hoot, really. Like, whether you like the spaghetti or not.
I went there and I met so many cool people that just showed up.
Yeah.
You know? So I mean, I was happy I went. I think anyone who likes Christmas but doesn't have family in the city or in the Bay Area, it would definitely be something that they would like to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's really crazy, because for me, it's so cool, because it's, you know, Pearl, as well as I do, that I've been involved in the city for so long, but I am involved in a lot of different communities. You know what I mean? Like, I'm involved in this sober community, and I'm involved in the drag community, and I'm involved with the leather community, and there's all of these various things that I do all year long, and, you know, occasionally, and actually, to be honest, frequently, people from different communities, I'll see them out and about or whatever, so they're always sort of, like, crossing paths, but this is the one day when I feel like all of the communities that I'm involved in sort of come together, and it's really cool. That's how somebody like you, who I see every single week, gets to come here and, like, meet people that you may not cross paths with or I've never met, because your social circles don't necessarily overlap.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I just love it, because all of my worlds come together and it makes me so happy. And yeah. And it's also the one time of year when this house gets a deep cleaning. So I've got a friend of mine who's going to come over soon and chill with me while I clean the house, because I hate cleaning by myself. I don't know if there's anybody else out there like that, but if there's somebody here to talk to and just, like, chit-chat with, I will totally clean. If I'm by myself, bitch, no ma'am. It's all bets are off.
You get to believe it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the unfortunate part about the whole thing is that the place gets cleaned up really, really nicely, and then it's, like, you know, Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day, the place, well, I usually clean it, like, a few days before Christmas, then starting with, like, December 23rd or 24th, I start cooking everything, and the next thing you know, by, like, the day after Christmas, it's, like, five times the wreck it usually was before, and then, it's just a mess. Anyway, but...
You having people...
So, don't spend Christmas... The point of this is, don't spend Christmas alone. Hit me up on either my personal Facebook at Pollo Del Mar Fans, or on the Facebook page for the podcast at Party Foul Radio, or tweet us at Party Foul Radio, however you want to do it, and I will make sure that you get directions and information about my annual Christmas Day spaghetti feed, as my friends call it. So,
what time are you having people over?
The festivities almost always start around 1 o'clock, and then they just last until who knows. Like, last year, legit, I was like, okay, bitches, it's midnight. You guys gotta go. There's always one or two bitches that are like, oh, girl, I'm having so much fun, I don't want to leave. And I'm like, that's great. I've been doing this for 3 days. I got to fall asleep now.
Right. I heard that.
Now, one of the things, because this will be our Christmas episode, you guys, episode 97 is Christmas 2017 episode of Party Foul Radio. Pearl, do you have a favorite Christmas or holiday story to share with the listeners?
Do I have a favorite Christmas story? No, I love every single Christmas that I love every Christmas. I'm such a Christmas queen, like, hands down. Like, I can't out-Christmas myself more the next year.
You don't have, like, a favorite Christmas of, like, from your whole life?
No, I don't. I just love, like, I genuinely just love Christmas. So, like, I can't just pick one Christmas. It's not going to happen.
Oh, my God. I have a favorite...
How do you have a favorite Christmas?
Well, I have a favorite Christmas because of the fact that... So, this is the story of my favorite Christmas. I was in fifth grade, and my family was extremely poor that year. That's pretty sad in and of itself, that we were really poor, but I knew that we were struggling, I guess, but I didn't, like, really know the extent that we were struggling, that my family kind of kept it from us. Like, we were young kids, and they just kept it from us. So, I didn't know exactly how poor we were at the time. But as it turned out, I mean, what I did know is that that was the first year in a couple years that, for example, my mom had to get a job and, like, things like that, because she'd been off and on through my early childhood, she'd been a stay-at-home mom. So my uncle and aunt had come over. My dad's brother and his wife had come over early, I guess, on Christmas Eve or whatever. And they'd spend some time with us. And then my sister and I went to bed, you know, waiting for Santa Claus to come. What I did not know, of course, this is why it's one of my, probably my favorite Christmas for, there's a couple reasons, but what I did not know is that we were financially so strapped at the time that my dad, because he really wanted my sister and I to have, like, presents from Santa, like, our grandparents had sent us, like, already packages, but he wanted us to have presents from Santa, you know, so he borrowed $20 from his little brother, and it was late at night, and the only thing that was open was a local convenience store. So he went and bought $20 worth of whatever to put in our stockings from Santa. First of all, I thought that was so touching because as an adult who has two young kids at that time, it must have been extremely difficult for him to ask his own little brother to borrow $20. $20 fucking dollars. Well, yeah, I mean, but families everywhere have hardships like that and bad times financially. And
yeah.
And it had been like a series of up and down years for our family anyway at that point. But the other reason why that is like my favorite Christmas story is because, as I said, the only place for him to go and get us gifts was this local convenience store. And one of the things that I got in my stocking was a copy of Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine. The listeners are aware I love wrestling, and I'd already loved wrestling as a little kid, but so I got this copy of this wrestling magazine in my stocking. I read that magazine, Pearl, literally so many times, front to back. I memorized pretty much every detail in it. I read it until the cover fell off. I read it till the pages fell out. And that magazine, when I was in fifth grade, inspired me to want to grow up and write about professional wrestling, which, of course, anybody who follows my work as a journalist now knows that that is one of the things, in fact, I have grown up to do, is write for a professional, you know, about professional wrestling for the Huffington Post.
All right. Look at Dad's making a difference.
So, yes, and that's definitely one of my favorite Christmas, that's like my favorite Christmas story. And then another Christmas story, which I also love, which Pearl, you'll probably think this is also fucking depressing. We mentioned this a while back on the podcast, but there was a time when I was, I was getting ready to go into first grade, and we had just moved to Texas, and a hurricane hit and flooded our home. So we lost everything. Do you remember this story, Pearl?
Shit. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were in the back of a camper or something like that.
On the back of a flatbed pickup truck, girl, for 3 fucking days. 4 days and 3 nights, actually.
Never.
We lost everything, and that was in the summertime. And so we lost all of our belongings. We moved into this apartment. My dad insisted we get a second floor apartment because he was so afraid of getting flooded again. And when Christmas time rolled around, like, you know, 4 or 5 months later, we were kind of still fucked because we had to replace everything we owned. When we left there, there was almost nothing that we had, like pretty much what was on the shirts on our back, sort of, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So our home, for example, was, our furniture was like folding lawn chairs and big wooden spools that you would find with industrial wire on them at a construction site. That's what we had, as like a coffee table. So we were not, like, things were, we were poor as fuck, basically. And we couldn't afford a Christmas tree. And my mom, needless to say, she, first of all, my mom, Sexy D, is amazing. You guys have heard me talk about her over the years on the podcast, but she's amazing. And she's also super crafty, like a super crafty person. She's very creative and very cool about certain things. So she, Pearl, went out and got a Houston phone book. Now, you know how long ago this is, bitch, because there's not even phone books anymore, really.
Right.
So she went and got a Houston phone book, and a Houston phone book is enormous. It was probably like 8 inches thick, you know, like the Yellow Pages or whatever.
Yeah.
So she took the yellow pages, and she folded each and every page. We folded it down so at an angle, and then she wrapped it around itself. So I know it's hard to explain this on a radio show or a podcast, but she wrapped it around itself and then glued it so that it looked like sort of like a cone, like, you know, like a Christmas tree would. And then she spray painted it green. And then my sister and I took cotton balls and dipped them in food coloring and let them dry, all these different colored cotton balls. And then we got to glue them to the phone book like we were decorating a tiny little Christmas tree.
Aww.
Oh, that's cute.
And so it's interesting, I think, that, like, we had many, many Christmases where we had, like, shit tons of gifts and, like, wonderful times and everything. But the two most memorable Christmas stories to me are the times that we were, like, super poor and we had to make do with what we got.
That's incredible.
I think that really shaped me because I am a person who now, like, really appreciates, like, small little things because, you know, there have been times when we've got
all of them and stuff it somewhere in that zoo.
Oh my God, whatever, bitch. She called me a hoarder, basically, is what she just did.
Yeah.
And there is some truth to that. There's some truth to that.
Yeah.
So, hey, Pearl, why don't we, since you don't even have a damn Christmas story to share.
No, I don't have, like, I don't have, like, a favorite Christmas story. I just love all my Christmases, especially, I think my favorite Christmas was, I don't know. I don't have one. I just love all my Christmases.
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I just think that, first of all, like, I always loved Christmas, too, because we lived far away from my grandparents, and my grandparents would often come down to visit for Christmas, so that was always special. I always loved Christmas because, you know, presents, hello. I mean, there were many times when we got a lot of stuff for Christmas. Oh, my God, I remember when I was in seventh grade, and Jordache jeans were, like, super popular, but they were also, like, super-duper expensive. And and I was too fat for Jordache, so I got a pair of Levi's 501s, and they were also super popular.
Were they called Jordache?
Jordache.
What is that?
Jordache jeans. It was a brand.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, my God. Jordache jeans in the 80s were, like, the brand. And Jordache jeans were, like, you had to wear them. They were, like, painted on. They were a dark, like, a deep blue color. They were basically the equivalent of what we would now call skinny jeans. Like, they were, like, really, really fitted all the way to the bottom of the foot. And one of the things that you knew that they were real or weren't real is that they didn't have a hem on the bottom. They had, you could see, like, the fray a little bit, but it was finished, but it was still a fray. It didn't, like, fold under and get hemmed like a normal jean would. They had a very specific, like, burgundy label. They had a very specific, like, the shape of a horse, I think, was their logo. And it was not to be mistaken with polo, but it was a real thing. Oh, my God, girl. It was, like, super a thing. Well, the point is, like, I wanted Jordache, but I was too fat for Jordache in seventh and eighth. But I did get this pair, two pair of Levi's 501 jeans, which were, like, another really popular brand of jeans, and I was able to fit those, and I got a pair of blue ones and a pair of black ones. I was, like, I was so excited, and then a couple of days later, oh, my God, I'm waiting for it, you guys. As soon as I tell her this, she'll be like, aha! A couple of days later, one of my dogs chewed up the jeans, and I was so fucking mad.
Never. This is why I don't have a zoo in my house. This is why I don't let those little critters run wild. No, never. I can't believe that. And did your parents keep him?
Yeah, we kept him.
No, I would have had a new coat.
Well, he also, the year before, he had been my Christmas gift. He had been my special Christmas gift also. He was a buff Cocker Spaniel, and he was so fucking cute. His name was Sherlock.
Yeah. He would have been cuter as a jacket if he's chewing up my jeans.
Whatever, bitch. All right. Since Pearl doesn't have special stories to share, and I'm all shared out, you guys, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have our first of two amazing celebrity interviews. We are going to be speaking with Canadian pop star Rhea May. You can check her out on YouTube. Her hit single, Bend, is currently in the top 50 in Canada, and she will be making waves. She'll be making waves here in the United States very soon. We will be back right after this with our interview with Rhea May on Party Foul Radio.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson. I'm hanging out with Party Foul Radio.
Hey, ladies. Are those male-oriented sex toys missing the spot? Well, check out wetforher.com. That's wetforher.com. You won't find any of those ugly, realistic elements like veins and balls. No, no, no. Wetforher.com offers sleek designs and sexy matching harnesses. Check out wetforher.com. It's a full line of sex toys by lesbians for lesbians. Hi, Rhea.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Really good. Thank you.
Well, thank you for talking to me today. I appreciate it. We exchanged messages on Twitter. I don't know if you recall or not. I was the glamorous drag queen.
Yeah.
I am so excited that you and your record label are beginning to, I guess, reach out to press and other people in the United States. I think people are sleeping on Bend.
I'm excited to go outside Canada.
First and foremost, one of the things that stands out about a significant amount of your music, not the least of which is Bend, is that you have this real 80s inspirational feel, so to speak. And I was wondering if you could tell me about the inspiration of the 80s on your music and sound.
Yeah, I mean, I love 80s and early 90s music. It's definitely not something I think I intended to do. It's more so like, I feel like I was like out of style, and then that kind of became in style. but I always love, like, my favorite music still is, like, you know, Tracy Chapman and, like, you know, early 90s, like, Green Day and, like, kind of, like, you know, hip-hop sounds from that time and, like, 808s and those sort of samples. And yeah, I just made that last album that I made, the self-titled one. I think there was a lot of luck that when it came out, it stood out on radio in Canada, and also that sort of sound became in style again, almost like throwback things and like more like singer-songwriter kind of classic style writing in pop music. And yeah, I don't know.
I know that you have been experiencing some success with Bend at home, and I was wondering what it was like to slowly watch your life begin to change from an obscure singer-songwriter to one who is beginning to gain recognition and be more visible in your own community.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, on one hand, it's really amazing because for a long time it was just me and acoustic guitar on like Greyhound buses, you know, and playing to like in a weird gay club to three people that weren't listening, or like in a coffee shop to like maybe 12 awesome people who were listening, just kind of grinding it out for a long time and really kind of working for every, you know, new fan, like just one by one by one. And then when I started getting radio play home in Canada, yeah, everything sort of did a 180, or it just started going really, really quick. It's awesome. It's not lost on me how lucky I am, because there's so many artists that are still grinding it out one fan at a time. So I think I just feel right now really, really lucky, and it still feels like a bit of a dream. But yeah, mainly just really lucky and happy.
Well, the great thing that I've discovered about, you know, winning over a fan base one at a time is that those are the people who, when the mass appeal might, you know, wane or ebb and flow, they're still going to be there. They're going to still be buying your album. They're still going to be wearing your t-shirt.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are invested, really invested.
Yeah, and I totally feel that, like, it's been cool because, you know, now I go to cities, you know, where I've never lived, and there's a big turnout for my shows, and I can always still tell when that original bass is there, because in Calgary a couple weeks ago we had like a tech problem and everything just shut out, mid-song. And I think it was a song that wasn't even a radio single, and then the audience just picked up and sang every word for me. And it's one of those things where it's like I don't feel like I have to prove that I'm not a gimmick because I put in the hours, so that part feels good.
When things started to move more quickly for you, was it geared towards the time when you first connected with Tegan and Sarah? Because I know that you've toured with them, and they would seem like the perfect marriage for your sound and their sound and the similar fan bases as well.
Yeah, and I've always had them on my radar as, like, that would be a perfect tour for me. They have built such an epic fan base of people that love them, like, and, I heard stories of, their fans will miss the opening act sometimes and still buy the album. And they just have this, beautiful fan base all over the world. And so I did want to tour with them. It was always a goal. And I had hoped that they would start, maybe hear my name through something. They're really on the pulse, of everything, of every new artist that's coming up, every queer artist, every, things like that. They're really on the pulse. So they... I was at the Much Music Video Awards, and they were in, like, the A-list room, for, like, with Macklemore and, like, all these bigger bands, and I was in, like, the bottom basement, like, the folding area with, like, the other new artists, and I wasn't allowed upstairs, and I just wanted to meet them so badly, and I ended up sneaking upstairs through security, through all these different levels, like, it could have been a movie, and I kind of, like, broke into their green room. And luckily they knew who I was. So right away they're like, "Oh, you're Rhea." And then they, it was kind of a conversation of like, it could have went either way. But they were just so kind right away. And in that first conversation asked me to go on tour. And it was freaking awesome. It was really cool to, meet some of their fan base. It took me to Europe for the very first time. And really have been like mentors ever since.
That is crazy. I'm imagining you like, it's like Rhea May, Mission Impossible, like you dangling down from the ceiling.
It was crazy. There were so many levels of people that were like, I at one point I got to like where I thought it was just the end, and it was all these security guards, and one of them had recognized me from another show. Like we had talked backstage and had a couple laughs, and he was like, "Oh, we met at the Junos," and I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "You need to help me get back there." He's like, "All right." Just like all these levels of like people I had met that year helping me. It was pretty cool.
That goes to show what can happen when you build unexpected relationships by treating people well that other people probably treat poorly, I suspect.
That's very true, and that's something I've learned as, like, I'm meeting bigger artists, like, and people, just are more successful in the industry, and there is a common theme, which is, like, they're nice to everybody. most of the people that are doing really well, it's because they've made these great relationships, and that is so important. Like, I think it's a positive.
I think that that's lost on a lot of people. I really believe that, sadly, kindness is sometimes lost on people, especially, particularly sadly, if they are experiencing success at the moment. You know what I mean? Because everything becomes more of a machine and less about a human interaction. But you never know, because we had a guest on the show a while back who got their record deal because her mom sat next to a hairdresser on a flight. It's like those random kind of things is, what can make or break somebody.
Crazy.
Now,
You never know. That's what I love about like life in general. You never know. You can't assume that a plane ride is just a plane ride. It could be anything. I think that's awesome.
Now, at what point in your life did you personally come out?
Well, I was lucky. So I was raised in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in Canada. It's a pretty liberal city. My mom was an activist. We grew up with her. For us, it was painful to watch television because it was just a lesson in what was racist, what was homophobic, what was sexist. And so we were like, "Mom, you ruined everything. You ruined the movie." Like, and so it was never, for me, my coming out was more like, "Oh, I don't want to be awkward," instead of like, "I hope my parents accept me." It was just like, "Oh, everyone knows I'm gay. I look like a little boy. Everyone knows. I just don't want to say the words." So I think I was about, I feel because I was an awkward and private person, I still waited until I was like, I think 18 or 19 when I had like my first girlfriend. I finally was like, "Mom, I'm dating someone." And it was kind of like, "You win, you knew." And in that way, and then in Halifax, I don't know if you're familiar with that part of Canada, but like it's pretty liberal. And I think I had I was lucky to be in sort of a bubble for those first few years when, you know, I think it's so important to be made, you know, to feel like it's not awkward and to feel like you can be yourself. And so in that way, I come with a lot of, I think, inner strength on that topic. Yeah, so for me, it wasn't a traumatic experience or anything. I feel like I was very lucky.
Well, I recognize, while I'm unfamiliar with Halifax in Nova Scotia, I'm familiar with what it's like to live in a bubble because being in San Francisco, as I am, we have a perspective on life here, and it doesn't take very far outside of the city for that perspective to begin to shift, and things that do not feel uncomfortable or awkward at home feel very conspicuous elsewhere. So I recognize what it's like to be in that and to gain strength in yourself from living in that kind of environment, because it becomes so acceptable that when you go elsewhere, when other norms are sort of thrust on you, you revert back to, well, no, this is not the way it has to be. You know, I'm from somewhere else that it can be different. So I'm sure that you took a lot of that with you as your career began to grow and you decided to be open about who you are in your career as well.
Totally, yeah, exactly. And I think that's something I'll get tweeted a lot, or, you know, people will come up, like, maybe, like, moms of queer kids in the audience, and will just, like, you're so brave, I can't believe you're, you know, you're being yourself. But, yeah, for the way I grew up, it wasn't a brave thing. I was just, it was lucky enough that I was in that bubble. But, yeah, I think it's cool, because the more people that kind of have that strength to be themselves in other parts of the world, I think it, you know, it does a lot of good.
As you tour the world, have you experienced overt homophobia or had issues in places that are not as accepting as Nova Scotia has been?
For sure. And I have toured in the States a few times, and, like, you know, as we drive more and more south, there's been more. Also, my band is, you know, my drummer is Indian, black, raised Muslim. My keyboard player is a very feminine Asian man with long hair who gets mistaken for a woman. And yeah, we definitely, like, as we go south, the three of us kind of kept that, you know, sometimes it's a real gut feeling, and sometimes it's just a perceived feeling of, like, oh, we should change our set and not play the song Girlfriend tonight, or we should, you know, that sort of thing. That is new for me, but it makes me really admire, you know, people that live in those parts of the world and stand up for what's right. And I just remember being in a mall in, like, North Carolina and seeing these two, like, older butch lesbians holding hands in the mall, and everyone staring at them, and I was like, man, those people are brave. Like, I'm not brave playing my music in Canada. These people are brave. So, yeah, I felt it, but again, it's like you said, like, I have that kind of inner feeling of, like, oh, this isn't right. You know, I know what right is. Like, I don't have to feel bad about myself. But, you know, as you get in the States, in some parts, it is really quite extreme.
And the United States, even at its worst, is still better than places around the world that, as your music expands, you're going to have the opportunity to experience. Not to, like, startle you, but with that, that's a realization we all have to make.
Yeah.
I was thinking, as you were describing your band, you are a petri dish of Hot Topic, you know, buttons or for the what our culture and society is experiencing, whether it's people who are inherently despising Muslims, or their issues with gays and lesbians, or their issues with multiple races. I mean, your band really encompasses all of it.
It's true. Our photographer that travels with us is Mexican. And yeah, we definitely have some good conversations for sure. And we learn a lot from each other. And I guess it's our own little minority bus bubble as well at the same time.
But that's great. I think that it's so wonderful that one of the most beautiful things about exposing ourselves to people outside of whatever our own individual bubble is, because you could live in the LGBT bubble if you chose to, but because of the exposure you have to your bandmates, you understand what it's like to be an Asian individual or a Muslim individual, or to experience the kind of pressure and issues that Mexican Americans are facing right now. And you have the opportunity to educate yourself through exposure to individuals who reflect each of those.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. If you hang around people just like the same as you with the exact same problems, it's easy to get obsessed with why don't we get this or why don't we, you know, and it is good to learn, I think, just in a way to keep your, you know, to keep positive about things, not to ignore the issues, but to realize, yeah, the privileges that you have and how lucky you are, you know, every day that maybe you don't have to deal with this thing. And so instead of focusing on the thing that I hate, maybe going to the washroom in an airport because people will yell at me to get out. So instead of focusing on that all day and being grumpy about that, I'm like, okay, well, let me focus on the privileges I have and maybe how I can be more aware for people that don't have whatever privilege, the white privilege that I have or the middle-class privilege that I have. And I think that is, and I hope it doesn't sound douchey when I say that, but I think it is, it keeps me positive to remember what I do have and not sometimes what I don't. And I think that is the cool thing about our bus, our minority bus, is realizing, you know, like, there's a lot of hard things about being gay, but when we go down south, I can kind of hide that in some ways, whereas my drummer can't hide his Indianness and blackness, you know? And then at the same time, though, he can comfortably go in the washroom, so he can enjoy that.
So you're actually mistaken as male, I'm assuming, is what you're saying, when you go into...
Yeah, my whole life, and that's a very big... So I think the struggles that I had coming out as gay almost are a lot smaller than the gender stuff, and I purposely put a picture of myself as a little kid on the cover of my last album just to show, like, I've always been this way. It's not, like, a Halsey move where I'm trying to have short hair, you know, in my press photos, and I think that has been a very defining part of, I was in the closet my whole life because I was so embarrassed of the way I looked. So, like, yeah, like, not drinking water all day, so I didn't go to the bathroom, sort of thing.
Wow. It's very interesting because, you know, that's something that I guess that everybody experiences that on some level for themselves. I mean, I know that growing up, I was more effeminate than society allowed me to be or said I should be. So I was very hyper-conscious of my mannerisms, for example, or the things I chose to say, you know, and that was successful or unsuccessful to varying degrees, usually largely unsuccessful, but, you know, because every now and then I'd just be like, oh, that's fierce, and be like, oh, damn it, I did it again, you know. But if it was something that was completely based on my physicality, there's nothing one can do to hide that.
Right. It's funny because still, like, and it happens less now, or people might just, like, I don't know what it is still, like, I think people, if I'm walking behind them maybe in a washroom, they might be like, oh. And then they just take that second and be like, you know, they do the quick scan. Oh, sorry. But I still do this thing where I talk ahead of myself when I walk in a bathroom around a corner. Or I sing, just so someone can hear my voice before they see me. And it's just one of those, you know, it's one of those things that you grow up with and not a lot of people experience it. But then when I can share that with other people, people are able to put themselves, maybe people just able to understand other people's, I guess, I don't know if it's a problem, but issues a little bit more. But yeah, that's totally a big thing for me. It's just, like, the gender thing. And it was, like, it's never for me been something of, like, oh, I wonder what I am. I've always just very much accepted or known who I was from a young age, but it's never been different than the gender that I am, you know, whatever you'd name that.
Right. That makes perfect sense to me. And it's very interesting to hear people reflect on the experiences of youth that have shaped them even in adulthood. Mm-hmm. So, as an artist who has been out throughout from the beginning of your career and as it evolves, do you feel, or is there a sense of internalized responsibility to the community to reflect perhaps what wasn't available to you as you were maturing?
Yeah, 100%. And that, like, when it comes down to it, I don't feel like I'm as brave as other queer artists that I see in media or social media, but I do have this sort of thing. I've always had this rule with myself where I don't lie in songs. Like, I won't pretend the song's about a boy, even before when I was, like, 13 and writing about, you know, fake relationships. I've never lied in songs, and I don't ever want to, yeah, lie in a video or in that sort of thing. And that has sort of pulled my personality out because I would lie in my real life. I would deflect, you know, didn't want to, you know, you meet a stranger, I'm sure you relate. It's like you don't mention your boyfriend or your girlfriend. Those sort of things, but in my music, for some reason, I always just, like, felt like I owed it to my music to tell the truth. And, yeah, I released a video for one of my songs called Gold that was a lesbian relationship, and I put myself in it, even though every step of the way I was like, oh, should I turn back and not do this? But I think it's so important to, you know, even if it's not, I always feel like I'm making this brand or story or songs or videos about, yeah, what I wish I would have seen when I was younger, or even if I'm not 100% brave, I want to represent someone who is brave so that someone else could look and say, oh, that's possible. And that is, I think I'm surprising myself a little bit because I am a shy person. I'm awkward. My voice shakes when I talk sometimes. Like, it's happening right now. But that part has been really cool to kind of feel braver because of that music, you know.
I'm curious what it is that you see in other artists that are out in their careers that makes you feel that they're more brave than what you're doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's just my humanness. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I just feel like, I'm always on the edge of like, okay, I can deal with this, but that's it. You know, that sort of thing. And I wonder if I grew up like, I wonder if it's just in my nature. Like if I grew up as like a straight person, I'd be the same. Like I wouldn't post, I'm not like an over-the-top, like posting, you know, things about my life or like really polarizing opinions or really, like I just feel like I'm, anything I, you know, talk about my queerness or queerness in general, I'm very like reaching to for the bravery sort of thing. But and maybe everyone's like that, I don't know. But in my little experience, I'm like, oh, this is, it's not as easy as it looks. Do you find that? Well, like, do you feel like...
I think that if I'm to be completely blunt, I'm a lot more of the fuck it variety. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm kind of the mindset that people who aren't going to like me or not going to approve of what I'm doing will probably always find a way to disapprove, whether I'm silent or... That comes from my own experience. As I said, growing up, I was trying to always monitor, for example, my hand gestures or my facial expressions or these things that were outward representations of who I am.
Right.
It didn't matter what I did because I still never fit in with those groups of individuals who had already predetermined whether or not I was acceptable by their standards. But I can certainly understand and appreciate, you strike me from our conversation just to this point as more of an introvert and a more of a private person who expresses a lot of the things that you don't on a public level personally through your performance, through your art. And I'm also not that person. So our decision making is almost not comparable because we're not apples and apples. We are apples and oranges.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I've never had that, like, fuck it thing. I think I've always been a little bit of a, you know, I was a kid who had good grades in school, and for some reason I just always wanted to, like, you know, make my parents happy, even though they weren't, like, strictly, they, you know, loved whatever I did. But I just always wanted to be, like, a good kid sort of thing, and there's something, that inner homophobia or something ingrained in me still that is, like, yeah, if I'm too outspoken, if I'm not, like, a good person or something, it's just crazy. And I fight it all the time, but it's, yeah, it definitely still lives there.
What I'm reminded of is I don't know if you are familiar with a singer named Shoshana Bean, but she was on a recent episode of the podcast, and she too talked about this internal need, which she labeled as perfectionism. She had this internal desire for perfection, and it kept her from sort of embracing certain elements of her career and her life. And when we were talking, I explained that I think that so many of us, we do second guess ourselves. You know, it sounds like you're second guessing some of your decision making. And I do think that that's human. I think that what is the difference between a brave person and not a brave person is to acknowledge that you're experiencing that and still going forward with it. That's courage. There's an old saying that what defines courage is being aware that there's a risk in doing something and choosing to do it anyway. If you don't acknowledge that there's a risk or you're not even aware of that, that's not courage. That's just stupidity.
Right.
And so a person who's courageous going onto the battlefield knows that there is a price that could be paid, and they do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. And then the person who just runs out there shooting is, you're like, you're just crazy. You know, you're just insane.
Right.
It's a little thought that you might take with you.
I love that. I feel like this is a therapy session.
Well,
I love that.
I don't mind that at all. So now if only I thought that I could like glean some kind of what it's like to be in a long-term relationship from you and how to accomplish that, then we'd both be getting something really beneficial out of this. But so
I have no advice there.
Yeah. Well, then let's just go back to talking about courage and some catchphrases I've heard over the course of 45 years of life. Now, tell me a lot about the new album and what you are planning to roll out as your career does advance.
Yeah, so I just released an album, or a mini album, I guess, like an EP titled My Love. And it is, I mean, it's kind of the cliche songwriter thing in some ways. Like, you know, I went through a breakup and I wrote about it, and then I started a new one and I wrote a happy love song about it. But the ones that, you know, the breakup songs are kind of really, and they're masks because they're poppy, like Bend, or there's one called Broken with Tegan Quinn, and they're catchy and poppy, but they're also very much about a relationship that became very toxic and out of nowhere became like the most unhealthy relationship that I was in and my ex was in ever, and kind of exploring that explosive magic mixed with horrible toxicity, which is, I think, really healthy to get away from it and see it. And I don't know if sometimes being in the closet or my own queerness has helped shape, you know, some of the negative aspects of relationships that I've kept, but it sure is fun to write about them, and they happen. And then, you know, entering another relationship that, after doing lots of work on myself and having a big space of time being single and very much alone and lonely, entering another one and starting to write about that. And yeah, I just wanted to release this EP as like a little section of time where I felt like I was finally over this, being over the relationship for a while, but not being over the what the hellness, the WTF of what was that toxic, horrible, insane relationship. And I wanted to release it, you know, before the end of the year, and a lot of things fell into place with this. Like, I just happened to have like a few weeks off in the middle of this insane tour schedule this year, and I recorded it very quickly, like in 2.5 weeks. And Tegan, from Tegan and Sarah, happened to be in town during those 2.5 weeks, and I made her kind of rap almost on this one song. Yeah, it really tied the whole project together for me, and I'm really happy to have it out there. In terms of what's next for me, I don't know. I'm going to release another EP really soon, but I'm not even sure. I think that's the fun part for me, is I'm home right now in Toronto, and just wondering what it will be. So, you know, that's my favorite place to be. And I'm kind of like scared and feeling very creative and seeing how I even feel about the current state of my life.
It must be a very unusual place to be in terms of the fact that Bend is a song that I have recognized for a number of months now that's sort of like been bubbling under. There's been this undercurrent of talk about it and promotion for it. And it's beginning to, it's still kind of growing in some elements because people are still discovering you. But it's probably your greatest singles success to date. So there has to be a contemplation going into, like, what is the appropriate follow-up for this moment in time?
Yeah, I guess so. And it's funny because for some reason, I don't let that stuff creep in to the creative process. I didn't even think I was going to release Bend as a song, and when I recorded it, the original version was like half as slow. I thought it was like a Tracy Chapman thing, like on that that sort of thing. And my dad heard it. I give my dad all my demos. It's very geeky. And my dad had this demo on repeat, and he was like, "Ree, you got to do something with this. It's a hit." And I was like, "I don't think it's a hit." And so, but I just don't. When all my songs are turned in, I very much trust my team and my dad and my manager, and they kind of tell me what they think is, you know, radio friendly. But for some reason, it doesn't enter my head in the creative process. And I think if it did, it would ruin everything. Like, I've been in songwriting sessions before. I don't do a lot of co-writing, but I'm just pushing myself to lately. And I've been in sessions where people are like, "All right, let's make a song like this, and let's try to make this." And I feel like I have to leave the room. Like, I can't even I can't think backwards like that. But I'm sure there is pressure. I'm sure there's someone at my label being like, Rita, better come up with something good for this next one. But I don't feel it.
Well, that is good, because just before we were speaking, I was working on an interview that I had done with a music producer named Frank Music, and he talked about that kind of pressure, and he talked about the collaborations that an artist can do, for example, with other songwriters, and their perspective is about what's current at radio, and it dilutes the artistic vision of the artist by sort of forcing them into a box that, for example, as clearly as it could possibly be, is the 80s type of vibe that finds itself in Bend. And if you had worked with somebody that wanted to give it a more modern sound, then the appeal perhaps would have been completely lost or changed.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. And, like, there is a way, like, and I love songs that are formatted for radio. Like, I've always loved radio. And I really agree with what's popular. Like, I feel like the audience is always right. I grew up, like, my dad, you know, ran restaurants, and, like, the customer's always right sort of mentality is in our family. And so I feel like if people don't like a song, it's not, you know, the song's not good. And I think there is a way, once the song is written, like, once it's at, like, 80%, to start playing around with that. Okay, you have three verses, probably too long, let's make it two verses. You know, there's definitely an element of that, but, yeah, I think in the creation process, you can really kill an idea by trying to make it cool. And by the time it comes out, that sound, like, if you're trying to use that synth from the Kesha song, by the time your song comes out, that synth is going to be embarrassingly old.
Yeah.
Things move so fast now. So, yeah, you really have to just make sure the song original idea is there, and then hopefully that makes people like everything else around it, the production and the approach, I think. I'm not an expert.
And when you are an artist of your variety, which seems to be one who takes their songwriting process and the lyrics, and you're very thoughtful, and you put significant parts of who you are into your music, then if you are allowing other people to influence it, then it could probably, presumably, very easily no longer really reflect you in a true form anyway, and you're building an audience of people who appreciate you.
Yeah, and it's hard. Like, I'm not a very, like, I'm in this position where everything is about my vision, and I don't back down on my vision, but I'm really bad at, like, communicating. I'm bad at being confrontational, or what I perceive as confrontational. And that is the biggest struggle, like, you know, sitting with a producer or, you know, someone else, and in my head I'm like, I'm not going to back down on this idea, but how do I say it in this weird, quiet, roundabout, almost manipulative way? Like, I'm trying to get better at it, but, like, it's hard to be someone's like, oh, no, this bass has to go here. I'm like, oh, I really like your idea, but I can't, I will die if you do that to the song. But, yeah, I feel like that's my, yeah, you have to be really strong. I'm really strong in my ideas and really, like, weak in my communication, or my, what is that word I'm looking for? Like, I'm just not someone that's going to walk into a room and be like, it's my way or the highway. So that's a challenge. But yeah, you have to stick to your guns in terms of your original idea, because, yeah, especially after a little bit of success, you're like, okay, my ideas are working, and you know, it feels like I'm onto something here. So it's important to stay on that road.
Rhea, no is a complete sentence. I think this bass should go here. No. I don't like that.
I know. It's hard. I watched this interview with Mindy Kaling, and she was, like, talking about how she still struggles with that. And, you know, walking into a room, and she has this staff of, like, 150 people on the show now. And she does this thing where she says what she wants and then leaves the room so no one can convince her otherwise. I was like, that's a good idea. You're like, actually, I would like the bass line to be here. Bye.
I'll be back when it's there. Let me know when it's done.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I really feel like I keep referencing previous interviews, because it's so strange how these through lines of conversations are happening in other interviews I've had with other artists in just the last week or two. And it's a situation where I think a lot of people are brought up to believe that, and now this is coming from my best friend who is a therapist, that confrontation is bad. That confrontation is bad, and if you express your point of view, you're bad, or you're bitchy, or you're pushy, or whatever. And then there are other people who innately lean into conflict, meaning if I don't shy away from this, I can express myself. And even in situations where, for example, I might not get 100% of my vision expressed in a final product, at least I know that I've expressed myself, that I was heard, and that what I've had to say has influenced the final outcome.
Right.
That's something that you can take with you. Just lean into it a little more.
That's one of the, I think it's been the big challenges and lessons of 2017. And, you know, when you start off just being alone and every decision is your own, and then suddenly there's more and more people, it's like you see the light of your own vision at the end of the tunnel, and you're just trying to fight off everything else. And hopefully I get better at that next year.
Look, you were able to make it up 7 flights of stairs to get into the dressing room of Tegan and Sarah at the Much Music Awards.
7 flights. Awesome.
Well, Rhea, thank you so much for talking today. I've enjoyed it so much, and I am excited to see where your career takes you and to see what is next from you musically. And I do think you're brave. I think that you're brave to be yourself. I think anyone who expresses themselves in a true form, artistically and in life, is brave, because there are so many other options. As you just pointed out musically, there are people who are telling us that something else is the better answer. And if you know yourself well enough to say, no, that's not what's the right answer for me, that is brave.
Thank you. This has been a good therapy session. How much do I owe you?
This interview is enough, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's a great interview.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
All right, listeners. That was out Canadian artist Rhea May. Her new EP, My Love, was just released in November. Go pick it up. Download Bend. View it on YouTube. Support out artists. She says that she's not brave, but she is making waves as an out artist, and that is brave. The more representation of the LGBTQ community that we have, the better it is for all of us. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I am Poya Delmar, and we will be back with our interview with Tony, Grammy, and Emmy Award-winning actress and singer Cynthia Erivo right after this. Daddy's Barbershop is located at 4102 19th Street at Castro in San Francisco's Castro District. Stop by and see Arlen, Jesse, and the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop to find out why Daddy's was voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Daddy's Barbershop is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. Keep up to date on all the happenings in San Francisco's queer nightlife by picking up your copy of Left Magazine today. With its celebrity interviews, news, features, and beautiful photo pictorials, Left Magazine is Northern California's most beautiful LGBTQ entertainment and lifestyles publication. Pick up your copy of Left Magazine today in the Castro, or visit them online at liveleft.com. That's liveleft.com. And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Poya Delmar. It is my pleasure at this time to take you to my exclusive interview with Cynthia Erivo, who in 2016 won the Tony Award for Best Actress in a Musical for her role in Broadway's The Color Purple. That year, the cast of Color Purple also won a Grammy Award for its recording of the music from the production, and later won a Daytime Emmy Award for an on-air performance of the production. Currently, Cynthia Erivo and Shoshana Bean are lighting up YouTube with their cover of Taylor Swift's I Did Something Bad, which, of course, you have heard about incessantly over the last month or so on this podcast. Please welcome as our special guest at this time, Skyping in all the way from Japan, Miss Cynthia Erivo, everyone. This is very exciting for me. I talked to Shoshana a couple of weeks ago about your project, and can I just tell you, she's such a lovely person.
She's kind of awesome. Oh my God, I just love her. I love her. She's amazing.
We talked, and it was incredible and, like, beyond anything I would have expected. And then she called me back, and I'm going to get to some of that because I want to share some of the things that she said with you, because some of it was so touching that I think that you deserve to know it.
Thank you.
it goes without saying there is not a person in the world who would say that 2016 was not, like, absolutely blockbuster for you.
The whole entire... The thing is, I'm still sort of... I think I'm still genuinely trying to process all of the things that have happened at once to me in the last 2 years. Because it feels like all of it should have really taken place over a span of about 5 to 10 years, but it felt like it was truncated and happened in the 1 or 2. And it's like, you know, I think I genuinely have, like, if I look back, there are things that I forgot happened, and I think, oh my God, that happened. How did I forget that was happening? But it's because something else was happening at the same time or happening after it. And so it just was, it's just been the most incredible, eye-opening, fast-moving thing ever. So it's just been amazing, but crazy.
And I can totally understand how that would be possible, because most situations, for example, we experience one amazing thing happens, and then you get to sort of absorb it and, like, relish it. And that could be as simple, in this case, as being cast as one of the most iconic lead roles for a Broadway musical of the modern era. You know what I mean? That happened for you, and that's something that a lot of people will never know in their lifetime. And then you went from that in the course of just a matter of, like, a handful of months.
Yeah.
You won a Grammy, an Emmy, a Drama Desk Award, and the Tony Award.
Yeah.
There's two questions I have here. The first one is there ever a moment when you kind of, like, look at that and you think to yourself, like, this is not my resume. This is the resume of whomever, you know, but...
It's so strange, because I think you're the first person who has asked me this question, and I'm always like, I wonder if anyone actually understands that when I... Sometimes I look at what has happened, and I think if I was to say it out loud to someone, they would think I was crazy. They would just think I was lying, because it doesn't look real. So in my head, so when someone says, oh, you won a Grammy, you won an Emmy, you won... It just sounds weird. To me, it still sounds very strange. There's still a small amount of, like, disbelief that it all's happened. And I have them out, like, in my apartment. They're on a display. And there are moments when I sort of look at them and I think, what the heck? How did that happen? It's still really... It's just a really weird feeling to know that it has happened, but the kid in me is like, that was a dream and that I wanted to come true but didn't know was actually really possible, mm-hmm. and then it happened. Yeah.
Relating to that, the thing that would strike me is it just happened so quickly.
Yeah.
It's not to downplay the massive kind of impact that your role had, obviously, on your career and the community of which you're part, but if you took any one of those things, you know, for other performers, one of those, like, I won the Drama Desk Award as Best Actress because, you know, people would be like, that's amazing. And that's like a career highlight. I won a Grammy. I won a... And this is my other question. What is it like to sort of, you know, kick off, what I guess, ending in your case, 2015, like...
Yeah.
An accomplished Broadway performer who's now celebrating a first big role type of thing. And within like 4 months, you are bona fide theatrical royalty now, because that's what happens when a person wins a Tony Award. What is it like, and how do people treat you differently as a result of all of this?
It is very strange, because I essentially, for all intents and purposes, just did my job. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I turned up, did my job, and did the thing that I knew how to do, which is tell stories. And so when all of that happens, there is a shift in the way people treat you. And it's really lovely, but it's also still strange, because I still am the same person who turned up to do her job.
Right.
So I'm still dealing with how, you know, even meeting fans who, there are people that burst into tears and it's, oh my gosh, it's a dream to meet you. And it's like, But like a year ago, I was in London and East London and nobody knew who I was. So it's sort of like, I want to try and keep reminding people that I'm still human. I'm still a real you pinch me and I can feel it and I'm there, like I'm a real person. So I don't know, it's so strange to, it's strange to sort of go through that change in such a quick time that it just, because for me, really and truly, I was just happy to be able to do Broadway. That was like it. I was like, oh my gosh, I get to do this. And then something else happened and it was like, okay, I'm nominated for all of that stuff. Okay, this is amazing. Then you start winning it. And it's like, what is going on? And something starts to sort of change in the air around you. And you kind of just have to sit and watch it happen. And the thing I've had to remind myself and to try and hold on to is to be gracious and to be graceful with people. Because I don't really ever want this to affect who I am at all. All the outspoken stuff you see is something that is, has been a part of me since I was a kid. I never knew how to shut up. So it's just who I've been. And then to add this to the thing, I'm sort of almost trying to make sure that no one thinks that it's because of that, that I'm outspoken or, you know, so then there's a, you start learning how to be cautious about what you put out, because more than anything, I want people to see that this is just an example of the way in which dreams can come true. And this is one example of the fact that it, whatever you put your mind to is possible. But I also want people to understand that I don't take it for granted for 1 second. And I don't, I still want to be an example for young people and in the way to behave with all of this stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that you, when you're an individual who's outspoken, you know, that's one thing. People take that with a grain of salt. But when you are a person who's outspoken, who has won a litany of awards, all of a sudden it's people perceive it very differently. Now it's ego-based. She thinks she's so, you know. And it's like, well, I was literally saying the same thing yesterday when there was no award on my mantle. You know?
There was no, Like, literally. And, you know, that's a tough thing to deal with. That is, that's the tough, the thing that I've found really hard to deal with. You know, with all the stuff that happens, I'm no different than I was before. I've always been outspoken. So when I say something and someone says, oh, it's ego and she wants to, and it's like, no, it's really not. It's just how, it's just how I am. I was always going to say something about this. It's just that now I have a bunch of awards on my mantle. That's just it.
And sometimes I think what it is well, this has just been my experience. Like, there are times when I am cautious because I recognize that I'm not in a position to say something necessarily. But when I have the platform, then the ideas that are pre-existing suddenly become a lot more feasible for me to speak up about. Like, you know what? No, this is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if you're going to, maybe because you place some extra value on, in your case, like a Tony Award and a Grammy and an Emmy, like because you place extra value on this, you will suddenly listen to me in a way that you would not have to a black woman from the UK who had an opinion on something, you know, 6 months ago.
That's very true. And I'm aware of that as well. You know, there's a double-edged sword with being outspoken, because I'm aware that people are actually listening, and I'm also aware that in that there's a responsibility to speak for those who won't be listened to.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that really personally. Like, I think that's the most important thing. The fact that if I can have an opinion on a subject that I understand, that I know that there are other women like me who have the same opinion, but no one is going to listen to them.
Absolutely.
I feel like it's my duty to be able to speak it out loud so that they know that someone is there for them and is speaking on their behalf.
I think that that's very important to recognize for any of us, no matter what level of success or fame or whatever it is, that when you recognize that you have the opportunity to speak for people who cannot speak for themselves, there's some obligation to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I defy anyone to feel okay with doing nothing when they know that they can do something. I personally would have a huge pang of guilt, and I don't want that for me at all. And I don't know that it's part of my personality to sit still and do nothing when I feel like I can. So that's just what happens.
I interviewed Patricia Arquette a while back, and she was
saying that the way people, even in the industry, changed the moment that she picked up her Oscar award was was alarming to her.
Yeah.
These are the same people in the industry who maybe wouldn't have taken paid any attention to her at all. And suddenly, because she had this statuette in her hand, she changed. And I was wondering if you've noticed similar.
I've noticed that people pay more attention to me. That's for sure. And I found it strange because I came from literally not having any awards to having a bunch of awards all at once. So it's like, it was an extreme. So it started out as like, well, this girl does this show. We're not sure who she is. To everybody knows who I am and everybody knows what's going on. And everybody wants to have a conversation and talk to me about stuff, which is both wonderful, but really disorientating.
Yeah.
Really disorienting. You just don't know, because all of a sudden you're sort of like, you're talking to me. Okay. So now what's going on? And then the things start following in, you know, in the most wonderful way. It's allowed me and afforded me loads of wonderful opportunities in this year alone. But again, it's sort of like, there are times when I'm like, I'm not entirely sure how I've managed to fit this much in or how all of this has happened and how that, these accolades, though they are accolades, they're still a small factor of what I do. They're not the hugest thing about it. It's just this thing that's added to the job I do has now sort of, I don't know, like become like a beacon almost to have people want to have conversation and want to like listen. That's the thing. It's people that now want to listen.
Yeah. I can really appreciate that you
probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, I appreciate that you call it disorienting, because I can only imagine that it would be. One would assume that even just getting a nomination, like, the phone calls start to pick up a little bit, the emails start to pick up, the offers. But once you win, all of a sudden, you are the person that they want. You've just jumped the line.
Yeah, and it feels like that's what's happening, because I think about it, and in essence, that was the first show I've done on Broadway, like the first and only show I've done on Broadway. So that in itself was a mind-boggling thing anyway. And then to have that one thing be nominated was another thing. And then to have that one thing win it in that circumstance was also very strange. And then if you think about the year it won it in, which was not... Essentially, it was the Hamilton year, you know. So really and truly, in my head, I was sure that it wasn't going to be me. In my head, it was like, this isn't going to be me. Like, even just in principle, it might not be me. Like that. So I didn't know what to expect. And when you look at the video, you'll know I didn't have anything prepped. I didn't write a speech. Like I didn't have any. The only thing I thought to myself is, if I do win, I want to make sure that I want to make sure that people know that my mum's here. That's about it. That's all I had in my head. Nothing else. So, to me, this is, from the get-go, it was a new thing.
I never actually made that connection that you won in a time when legitimately probably everyone in and out of the industry, even casual fans of Broadway, thought, if you're in a category against anything Hamilton, good luck. Good luck.
Right.
I want to ask you, and you feel free to just sidestep this question, but one of the things that I definitely wanted to ask about, and even as a casual fan of Broadway, mm-hmm. the whole Jennifer Hudson thing with the tweet and the delete and the, I mean, it just, mm-hmm. it did not portray her as particularly gracious. And I've met her and she was gracious. And so I was shocked.
Yeah. The thing is, I love her to bits, and I know that she's an innately good person. And I don't know that she meant it the way it came out. I think maybe, I don't know. I feel like it was just a gut reaction. I think, you know, when you're in those situations, it's so highly strung that your feelings are, like, at the surface. And I feel like she worked just as hard, and I think that maybe her feelings just were hurt.
Yeah.
And I understand that. I understand that completely. And I don't think it's reflective of the person she is, because I think, to me, she's been wonderful. With me, she was wonderful. So, and I, you know, we still speak, and I still check in on her, and we still, you know, she's a person who loves the work that she gets to do, and she loves to sing. That's her.
Well,
so I feel like it was just a, you know, a moment of, like, what's going on, I think. I think it just was a weak moment, and that was that.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why, I can understand both perspectives. I can understand that anybody would want to cast Jennifer Hudson for name value, number one. I can understand that. But,
yeah.
But the
yeah.
contention that people would also not cast her because of her insane amount of talent in terms of vocal quality
right.
is also, it's
right.
like, oh, come on. Now, you can't possibly believe that. You know, like, you're Jennifer Hudson, for
yeah.
God's sake.
Right.
So.
Right.
Okay, so you mentioned that you have managed to pack in so much this year. And
yeah.
I was looking through your resume, and it's like, from what I saw, there are at least two, possibly three films that you've worked on this year already. And
yes.
And one of them, so I was quite excited. So you, from what I'm looking at my notes here, you shot Widows this summer with Viola Davis.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and Andre Holland, who I personally may or may not, I plead the fifth, have fallen totally in love with as Kevin in Moonlight.
And I do not blame you.
Yeah, he's, I mean, he's beautiful, and it was emotional, and oh, God. So, tell me about that experience.
So what I will say is that Andre Holland wasn't in the movie this time. He wasn't able to do it, but we did have Daniel Kaluuya, which is another, whole nother situation anyway, which with his year being with Get Out and Black Panther and all of that, so he's that entity ends up being in the film as well. It just was incredible. What I realized whilst doing this was that Steve McQueen is one of the nicest people on the earth, like, ever. It was one of the most incredible experiences, which I think, and I was worried whilst doing it because I feel like I was spoiled, and I think it was, in my head, I'm like, in the nicest possible way, this may be a misrepresentation of what filming might be like, because this is way too nice. Like, I'm enjoying this too much, and it feels great, and the discussions are wonderful, and the film, I think, is going to be amazing. I'm working with these incredible women. We're getting some wonderful things done. The team's amazing. It's super harmonious. There are no issues. We're getting stuff done. Everything is super organized. It was like everything that you could possibly need for a first experience on a film set was there for me. It was amazing. Amazing. Viola Davis is literally a legend. She's incredible. Funny as heck. And super cool. And so wonderful with her craft that it's actually mesmerizing to watch her, like, be in a scene. She's incredible.
I wanted to ask you, because the experience that you described 5 minutes ago about your year in 2016, I would think
yeah.
that you could have gone to Viola Davis and said to her, my mind is blown right now because I've gone from somebody that people are aware of to somebody who is this, whatever, I don't even know what it is yet. Tell me about your experience.
Yeah.
Because she kind of did the same thing, you know what I mean? We knew Viola Davis, and then the Oscar
yeah.
comes along,
yeah.
and all of a sudden the same thing for her.
Yeah. Well, the lucky thing about the position that I was in is that I ended up, I call them my gurus. So I ended up being in a position that I ended up meeting a bunch of wonderful women who really have helped me know what to do and have been around to talk to about it. I met, so there's a woman called Michaela Angela Davis, who is amazing. She's a wonderful, she does interviews. She's like a fashion guru. She's like wonderful about that stuff and super knowledgeable. Then there's Oprah, who occasionally I'll just email and say, look, this is happening and need some quiet. And she'll give me like a slice of like advice. There was one.
Shut up. Oprah emails you.
It ran. Yeah. Yes. She's,
hold on. Wait,
she
stop.
Said I was doing too much.
Just stop. Oprah emails you. Do you understand what you just said? Put aside the fact that you have, like, every award ever created, pretty much, on your mantle. Oprah emails you. not any... Oprah. Normal people are like, oh my god, my girlfriend at the grocery store gave me the best advice. You're like, so Oprah gave me this advice. Oh my gosh.
but it's been like that the entire year. Like the reaction you're having it's been like that the entire year. Like it's been from Oprah, it's been from Anna Wintour, it's been from Cicely Tyson, it's been from Shonda Rhimes, it's been from these women who are like, they're enormous. These people are like, I don't even know, titans is what they are. And I've had the most amazing, like, input and wisdom and guidance from these people. So I feel like, you know, I know that it's possible that there's stuff that's happening that's probably slightly bigger than me. And in order to get through, I have these people who are so super knowledgeable about what is going on that they can actually help me.
Oh, no. We lost her. Probably Oprah called. Good God.
Can you hear me?
I can. I just assumed that Oprah was calling you and I got disrupted.
Hold on, let me put my video up.
I said, oh my God, I totally got disconnected because Oprah was calling her. I would take Oprah's call too. Hello?
I mean, because, you know, I had to get past that. I had to get past the fact that she
is Oprah.
Had the time.
Yeah.
You know, to even bother, to even think about it. And it was about the fact that I think one month I was, there were loads of events I was going to or performing at, and she emailed me and said that I think you might be doing too much. And she said, because I've been asked for these specific events and you're supposed to be at every one of those. Take some time. Like breathe. Make sure you're actually giving yourself some time away. And she was right. She was right because I was running around constantly. Like if I think about how much has happened in 2016, it's felt like about 2 years. And like I keep forgetting that the Grammy was this year and the Emmy was this year, not last year. And in my head, more stuff has happened in this stretch of a year than I could fully comprehend. And so it's been like advice like that, getting help from people and talking to people about what's going on and what to do. And it's just been, I've been lucky in that I've been able to reach out to those people. And not just the people that we know. There are people who are super, super established in business who are lending a hand and able to talk to me. Like Mariska Hargitay is a wonderful, wonderful person.
I love her too.
She's incredible, incredible. And will just be like, if you need space, go and stay here and be there. You can do that. That I just know that if we think about it this way, if I ever feel like I'm sort of leaning towards one way because I feel like I'm about to fall, there's always someone to go to push me back up and prop me back up. Because it's, you know, I didn't know that it was going to be like this. So I'm still like learning how to deal with it and to move through it. And you can't do that on your own. It's impossible to do this kind of thing by yourself. And I've just been lucky enough to have people around me who are wise and sensible and who've been through it and who know what's happening and are able to be there for me.
You know, I didn't even think about the fact that you are playing, you played and won the Tony for the same role that Oprah played and got snubbed at the Oscars. That was the big thing of her year. Oh my God. It was, it's poetic justice in many ways. So makes perfect sense. Now,
you know, I don't know if you've seen that video, the one video that there are two things that I love rewatching about Tonys, and that's when I say, look, Mummy, they go to her and she's standing up and blowing kisses. That is one of my favorite things in the world. And then there's the other one when I win it and they pan to Oprah and she's going like this, yes, 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 yes. And it's one of the most amazing things because it's like a proper affirmation of two of the best women in my entire life rooting for me. That's sort of like, that's the epitome of what this is and where it's come from.
Yeah, that must feel so good. I got choked up just now. I'm like, so
yeah.
I wanted to ask you, I saw a report that you could be attached to a Harriet Tubman film.
Yes.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
It is. Mm-hmm. Wow. You're about to have a really, really few good years. You're like, you're going to have a few good years, honey. Some people get like, it's a one and done, but I see this continuing for you. So.
It's been crazy. Like I finished a film called Chaos Walking, which is like a sci-fi thing, which also came out of the blue. That was like, I went for it. I forgot it. I thought I didn't get it. Then I get this call randomly when, also strangely, when I'm on the set for like Project Runway or something. Strange. the things that have happened this year, I can't even, just strange. And then I get this call to say that I've got the role I went for. And I'm like, but how? Because I didn't go for a callback or anything. I went in once. In LA and forgot about it. Like, I went to LA, did it, and this is like, I went back to Chicago to do Widows. This is whilst I was doing Widows. So I was like, that's impossible because that was like months ago. And they're like, well, yeah, it came around and they came back around to you and they really want you, so movie's yours. I'm like, okay, we'll do that movie too. That finished like literally in November, and then I started, I went in whilst that was happening. I was going in for this next movie that I start shooting literally in January. Like, the end of January, I go and start filming.
Wow.
Another film where I'm playing the leading lady, which is another animal on its own. And that goes till, like, April for me. And then I think Harriet happens towards the end of the year, like September.
Whew. Yeah.
It's crazy, and they've just, like, and so Widows is coming out also in November. Like, that's coming out, too.
So, yeah, I just read the Wikipedia and I was exhausted. You're living it, so I get it. Okay, now, this is just really something brief, because you were only on one episode, but every homosexual I know is obsessed with chewing gum, and because it's so witty and biting and, like, really funny, and you were on just one episode, but I really wanted to ask you about the show, because it's like become a phenomenon of sorts.
Yeah. So what people don't know about this show is that Michaela had this show in mind years and years and years and years before it was on screen. It actually started out, I believe, as a play. She wrote it as a one-woman play, and she did it in London, and it was incredible. And then she rewrote it for TV, and it's been like in the works for the longest time. It premiered on TV, and then it became syndicated for Netflix, and now is able to be all around the world. Girl has worked her ass. She's worked so hard on this particular project. She worked her ass off, like, for real.
Yeah.
That's the thing about this show. And she pretty much directed it. She wrote the thing and wrote it by herself. Like, it's all her own writing. There's no other writer on board. You know how some shows have a writer on and they bring a couple writers on to do... It's all her. Those are all her words. She sits 24 hours a day in a cafe somewhere in London, writes the whole thing, or goes away somewhere and writes the entire series. And it's essentially why, you know, people are asking for this third series as well. But I don't think people quite understand that when she says she's doing it on her own, she really is doing it completely alone. Like, she's doing it by herself. So it's a feat of, like, she's doing it with her own time, having to find the time to sit, to write, on top of the fact that she is an actress. So she is working as well. Mm-hmm. She's doing shows, she's filming stuff, and she's everywhere, but having to also write this. Is what it is. It's quite a sad.
And she just doesn't have Oprah to tell her, you're doing too much. I mean, really, you should just forward an email from Oprah. You're doing too much. Oprah told me, I'm telling you.
Yeah, you know, and I check in from time to time. We check in with each other from time to time because we've known each other since we were like 15 or something. So I occasionally she'll pop into my head and I just worry. That's all. I want to make sure that she's okay. And we can't always get contact, but she's always on my mind because I know how hard she's working. I just know it. Like, I don't know how she's doing that. We have very full plates in very different ways, you know, and it's the balance game. You're sort of having to figure out how to make it all work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you're doing all this, but of all the things that could have, like, really, really turned me on to you and Shoshana was your duet together on YouTube. I owe my relationship to both of you to Taylor Swift, which is kind of sad and kind of amazing at the same time. But she was telling me that the success of the song has blown you guys away.
Are you kidding? Like, we had no idea. None at all. Like, for us, it was like, okay, people might be really excited that we're working together because we haven't really worked together before. And we've never done something like this, specifically just the two of us. And for us, it had been a long time coming. We've known each other for a long, long time. And, you know, in this sort of last year, we've reconnected and sort of found each other again, which is, you know, one of the most amazing things because she sort of gets me implicitly and just knows the right things to say. So it brings me super, super joy to be able to be back in her life and to have her back in mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just like, just a fun thing that we were going to do. I happened to be going out to LA and she was like, I've got this. Should we do it? And I was like, okay, let's do it. We went to the studio at like 8 o'clock at night or something, got our faces beat and then sat in front of a camera and sang the song. That's literally what it was. The two of us were like, people will, you know, be really happy to see us singing this together. And neither one of us could ever have expected the reaction that it got at all. And I was freaked. Like, you see the text messages, we're just sort of like telling each other what it's been picked up by. Billboard picked it up, and Vulture picked it up, and This has picked it up, and ET's picked it up, and Entertainment Weekly's picked it up, and what's going on? What is happening? What is happening? And why is everyone going so crazy over this? It's like, what do we do? And she was like, I don't know. I don't know why or how. And it just sort of took its own sort of, I don't know. It made its own sort of personality and it's like run with it. It's been so crazy. And the response that we got is like my godmother, my aunties text me specifically because of this. I didn't send them the link. They found the link and sent me a message and were astounded by it. It's like people that don't look at the internet finding this video out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing to me. I'm blown over by it. I mean, what way to like end the year, for goodness sake, this is crazy.
Yeah, like I...
I just woke up one day randomly, and it came through my news feed, whatever, on Facebook, because somebody was sharing it, and then I listened to it, and then I listened to it, and like 4,000 times later listening to it, I was on the phone with Shoshana in 2 days, which was crazy for me, and now here it is, like, a week later, and I'm sitting face-to-face with you on, like, a video chat, and it was... And by the way, when I'm in drag, I've been performing this song all over because I am obsessed with it. And I've turned it on to every person I know. I mean, really, I'm like a one woman-ish promotions team for you, street team.
Crazy.
There's something really captivating about it.
And the people that were like the most unlikely people to like enjoy it, we're enjoying it. It's so weird. I don't know what it is.
Well,
what's wonderful is like when people start like looking at the detail of it. It's like someone is looking at how I look down, or looking at Shoshana's like contour. It's like these things are like we just got our makeup done and sat, and that's literally it.
Oh, I think you must be referring to the meme that I created and tweeted to both of you, and I said. She's got her "Don't Fuck With Me" contour on. They should have known better. Like, okay. I mean, the contour is so
true.
Her contour is so sharp, honey. She will cut you with her contour. Oh yeah, absolutely. I was living for it. When you see a woman with contour like that, you don't mess with them. She's like, listen.
I don't have time for it. Like, leave me alone.
Mm-hmm. This contour tells you
that's
how severe I am.
Like.
Oh, my goodness. But I really do think it's really captivating because the video... And one of the things Shoshana mentioned in our interview is that for her it was a lesson, and I think it should be a lesson to so many people that... Like, you don't have to do the most, you know? There's some videos that I can't even watch the video because there's so many things going on. I feel like I'm about to have a seizure.
Yeah.
And with you guys, you scarcely move a muscle for, like, 4 full minutes. But I've watched the video probably, I mean, not to exaggerate, but probably a couple hundred times at minimum, literally. And... You know, it's captivating, start to finish. She credits you for the fact that you guys never move. She said, oh, no. She said, Cynthia said they're going to watch.
Well, here's the thing. I love the idea of stillness, where you can have stillness. I even when I do a lot in my performances, often where I can find the stillness, I'll be still. And I felt like this song didn't need anything other than utter focus. And she'd said the idea was to be super pulled and like proper about it. And I was like, if we're going to do that, we might as well go the whole way. And I think she wanted to do a couple of things. And I was like, well, why don't we just sing it? Look into the camera and sing it. She said, you're sure? We should just... I said, yeah, they'll watch because the intention is there. You can... Everything with a look away, a look down, a look forward, like all of those things can tell you exactly what I'm thinking without me having to move anything. And I think that is captivating because it's the two of us doing nothing at all, but still being completely in sync. And I think that's the thing that really like was on the money. The fact that she and I, we're breathing together. We're singing at the same time, but we never have to look at each other. We never have to do anything other than look forward. And there's a moment where I was sort of like, we really were in sync, where I look down, she looks up, I blink, and then we're sort of like, it's like doing the almost pan the diagonal and come back again. And I was like, how did we know to do that? Well, she takes like this exasperated breath and I rub my sleeve and it's like the same sentiment, two different people doing two different things, but it's the same like feeling, but we haven't discussed that we're going to do that. We just do it and we're in sync. And I think that in order to access that kind of that breath between the two of you, you have to sort of accept some stillness and like really zero in on what the other person is doing. And you can't do it when you're doing a bunch of different things because you're not paying attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to see how it felt to just sing with her as well. Like that's what I wanted. I like the idea that there's nothing around, so all you can hear is our voices and that's it.
One of the things, as I said early on, there's some things that she said about you that I think are so important, and I'm sure she probably has expressed them to you because she's very expressive. I like that about her a lot. When I got off the phone with her, I was like, I tweeted and I said, I think that Shoshana Bean and I became like unofficial BFFs because it was such that thing. But I'm suspecting that she's actually just that person that everybody feels that way about when they spend time with her. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she was telling me in something that was really shocking about how her sense of self was undermined by doing Wicked. And she was telling me about how that kind of crushed her in a lot of ways and crushed her creative spirit, which, of course, I was sitting and we were not on a FaceTime like this. So I wasn't like, she could not see me going, no, totally clutching the pearls, gay clutching. You know, it was shocking to hear. And then what she said that inspired her in a way to feel like that creative spark again was watching a performance by you wherein you basically turned your back to the audience during like the highest note, like the most, and she was stunned that you would do that, but it worked, she said. And what it did for her in this odd way is affirm that an artist can listen to their instincts and do something completely unusual. It was this whole thing. It's kind of convoluted, but I totally understood it. Basically, what she was saying is that when everything went down for her with Wicked and she did not feel worthy of that role that she ultimately was cast in for other people's perception, she was aware that she has instincts that make her completely unique and nobody else could do them. And she saw that in you.
Yeah. So. And the thing is, I love her so much. Wears her heart on her sleeve, and we've had so many wonderful discussions about you know how she felt like that from time to time, and I didn't know that was something that had helped or inspired, because in my head I don't know, there's a sureness that as long as whatever I'm doing comes from that, I know that it serves the story and isn't in any way mostly in service of myself, then I know that people are still going to pay attention. It's why, you know, when talking with someone on stage, when I'm talking with another character, when I was doing that, because it wasn't a conscious decision to turn my back to the audience. It's just that naturally that's what felt right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I think that what was happening is that she had a natural instinct to do certain things and then second-guessed herself. I think that maybe she's just at a place where she just knows she doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. So you and I are so similar because I was once in an off Broadway production, meaning it was in California, in somebody's living room. The one thing that she said is that I learned from that experience, and just being in drag in general, is that like people can tell you anything they want, but when you walk on the stage, it's happening. And if you do it, like the only time they're going to tell you it's wrong is if it doesn't go over. But if it feels natural and it works, then it works. Period. End of the discussion.
Then it works.
Yeah.
That's it.
So.
That's it. And you know, once it's in your head that no one's going to pull you off that stage once you're there, no one's going to do that to you. That world is yours to do with as you please. And if you use it in the right way, you can do whatever you need to, you know. And I think that now I know that she knew, but now she knows, which is awesome. And I didn't know that it was because of that. And that's amazing to me.
Well, I mean, to be honest, when I was speaking with her, to hear that somebody who is, I mean, I could understand, and like, it totally came up in like the most random way, because I just said the obvious, like, there must have been a world of pressure on you to step into the shoes of one of the most iconic roles as performed by one of the most iconic actresses of the modern generation.
Yeah.
And it just opened the floodgate, because I think that nobody, I don't know if it was nobody had or whatever the way it was addressed. It just, she felt it was that moment. The connection was right for between, unlike the connection on our call here, like the connection between her and I was right, you know, and like, and she just said, you know what? I've never said this to anybody. I don't know why I'm saying it now, but this is what happened. And it made my jaw drop, because it's something that no average person would think, that you're getting the biggest break of your life. And I told her, I was like, there are people who would push their mother down a flight of stairs to get that role.
Right.
And you couldn't, it ruined something in you just because you had self-doubt. Yeah.
And that's a terrible thing, because there's an aspect, like, genuinely, on Color Purple, during it, I think I lost my mind a slight amount, because there's a point where the character and the person blurs completely, and you lose track of reality. Mm-hmm. And so I would get on stage, and the words would be said to Celie, but it always felt like it was being said to me. Like, towards the end, there was no wall anymore. Like, I was raw. Like, completely. So the reaction you were getting whenever you were on stage was genuinely from me, because it hurt me. But in order to even have started and to have gotten onto the stage in the first place, I had to have had enough confidence in the fact that I was meant to be there, because that role can destroy you if you don't believe you're supposed to be there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine how debilitating that could have been for her to be in that position, because that stuff is really hard. It's not just like being on stage and playing the role, it's being the lead of the company. Like, you're the leading lady of the company as well.
Mm-hmm.
So she's dealing with how she feels about herself in that role and dealing with leading a company. It's almost impossibly difficult to do that when you're dealing with trying to deal with yourself as well. I know it was hard even for me to, like, fully fathom what it was to be a leading lady as opposed to just the person who is playing the character. Like, that's something else. That's a whole nother kettle of fish. And like, I'm just glad that she's come through it. I'm glad that it didn't take all of something out of her, like, because I think whatever she feels is ruined can be fixed, but it just takes a little bit of like love and encouragement and like just a bit of light, really. And I think that's probably, I think we found each other to mend each other a little bit, to be honest. And genuinely, that's what I think. I think one of the things she's done is, you know, how we were talking about how crazy it's been this year and all the things that have happened. And as wonderful as it is, again, it's really difficult to sort of navigate. But I talked to her about it a lot, and she just affirms that that's not a crazy thing to think. It's not an unfair thing to think that this stuff is difficult. She just helps affirm that feeling.
Yeah.
And we talk about what to do, like, get through those days. It is a lot. And then we talk about what she might need. And I think that the two of us have sort of found each other to sort of hold each other's hands a little bit now, because we lost each other for a second and we hadn't spoken to each other's time for no reason other than we just lost touch. And then we just found each other again, which is kind of awesome.
Shoshana, if you're listening.
I never believe those things are bad.
Shoshana, if you're listening, she stopped calling you because Oprah was on the other line and Anna Wintour. And
you're
speaking, okay, this is the last thing, because I know you're super busy. You guys, she's in Japan, by the way. And I, the last thing I have to ask you about, we've been on the phone almost an hour now, and I cannot stop staring at your damn nails. Your nails are amazing. You know you're talking to a drag queen when you're like, I'm gagging over your nails, honey. Oh my God, I wish you guys could see them. So, like, do you always have, I mean, presumably you're not allowed to have nails like that sometimes.
Well, before I did The Color Purple, I was doing, I was doing a show on the West End called I Can't Sing, and I was doing a show before that, I was doing Sister Act, and I've had nails since I can remember up until The Color Purple, and I didn't have them for The Color Purple, and the moment The Color Purple finished, I got my nails back.
I bet you did. They're gorge.
These are the things that, thank you. Thank you. And Shoshana has really great nails as well. Have you seen her nails as well?
I haven't. I need to look.
She tends to go for like a real, like super sleek, simple color. It's usually like a nice taupe color, but the length and the shape is like the same as mine. And I go for everything.
I know, honey. You got like jewels and gems and you guys.
Everything.
Listeners, I will tell you, you could conceivably perish at the hands of her nails, literally, she could stab you to death with them, but you would die feeling fabulous because they are gorgeous.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, absolutely. They would just come knocking on your door, but they'd be like, well, we found a corpse. It looked, you know, we found one of these gorgeous nails. Just, yeah. You get them done how often?
Depends on what I'm doing, but usually if there's an event, I change them to match my outfit. So when I went to the Met Gala, they were white to match my dress with like pearls and everything. They were crazy. And then for the film that I did with Widows, he loved my nails, so I had to keep them. So I kept them white, and they changed up the jewels from time to time. And then they changed again. They've been like for Serena's wedding, they were different again. For like this, they change constantly. They change constantly.
Did you guys just hear her? She slipped that in there. Oh, for Serena's wedding. There was like, da-da-da. Oh, enough. Enough. She just, it's really adorable, though, because she just randomly said, oh, for Serena's wedding. I just, the nails were just fierce or whatever. And just stop it. Well, I am really grateful that you took time out. I know you're in Japan, and I'm grateful that you took time out to talk. And I just, it was wonderful. It was beyond anything I could have imagined our conversation to be. So thank you.
My absolute pleasure. You're awesome. You're like actually amazing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're amazing.
So
also, like, the shape of your jawline is to die for.
Well, thank you.
You have the most amazing face.
I'm giving her side. I'm giving her jawline, you guys. So it takes a little bit of work. It takes a little work in makeup to make that go away. I mean, it serves me well when I'm not in makeup. But
it's cool.
So
but it's beautiful. That's what I'm saying.
Well, thank you. I'm gonna tweet you after this a picture, like a couple of pictures from recently, to see so you can see how beautiful I look in makeup.
Thank you.
But I never do nails because I gotta send texts and things like that. No way. Can't.
So. I'm so used to using like guys on my thumb or like they don't even get in the way anymore. I'm just so used to like using them that I'm used to it. I don't use my fingers to type, I use my nails to type I'm on my computer.
Yeah, that's it's always such a fun sound. You can tell when somebody's got nails, it's like tick, 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 tick.
Yeah.
Well,
I like that sound too.
So, thank you so much. Enjoy Japan.
I will. Thank you.
And
thank you.
I'm super excited to see what you're doing, like, and see things roll out, and just keep abreast of everything you're doing.
Yeah. Next year's gonna be lots of fun, and I will keep you posted because there's lots of stuff coming and lots of stuff about to happen. So I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Mwah. See you soon. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Oh my gosh, you guys. That was Cynthia Erivo. And until like an hour ago, I was obsessed with her music.
and her acting and just, you know, general fabulosity. But we just spent an hour on FaceTime with Cynthia Erivo, Tony Award winner, Emmy winner, Grammy winner. It's so different to interview somebody on FaceTime because we're sitting and interacting with each other. She gets to see when I'm like clutching the pearls, like because something she said has gagged me, or she got to see my actual facial expressions every time she was like, and Oprah emailed me and Anna Wintour. And you guys, really though, she slipped in the Serena Williams for Serena's wedding. Too much. Anyway, follow her at Cynthia Erivo on Twitter so you can keep abreast of all the amazing things that she is doing. 2016 was a stellar year for her. She has been busy filming throughout 2017, and more films and other projects coming up in 2018 with many of the films that she just wrapped this year coming out next year. So 2018 looks to be huge for Cynthia Erivo, and I'm so excited that she has joined us here. I am Poya Del Mar. You're listening to Party Foul Radio, and we will be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Poya Del Mar. And if you want to stuff my stockings this holiday season, use Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. Their full line of silicone and water-based lubes, anal creams, masturbation creams, and even male enhancement products are available at fine retailers near you. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricant is the personal choice of Party Foul Radio. Want to stay abreast of what's happening in the LGBTQ world abroad? Visit Australia's premier LGBTQ website, GuideToGay.com. For news, travel coverage, and Pride event information for around the world, plus all that's happening in queer nightlife and the queer world down under, visit GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio. All right, and we are back with more Party Foul Radio. We just heard from Tony, Emmy, and Grammy-winning actress Cynthia Erivo. She is also well-known for her duet now with Shoshana Bean. We had Shoshana Bean on the last two episodes. They cover Taylor Swift's I Did Something Bad, so go check that out. I'm still obsessed. Weeks in, I'm still obsessed. Pearl, how about her saying to me, oh yeah, whenever I get overwhelmed, I just send Oprah a message and she tells me exactly how to handle the things.
How dare you? I don't think anyone should ever just be able to say Oprah's name like that so casually.
Oh, ever. I know. And wait, the like at the end of the interview, we were talking, I was like, girl, your nails are fierce. And she's like, you know, I actually got to keep them for my most recent movie role because I got them done all in white for Serena's wedding. And I was like, wait a minute. You're talking about Serena Williams, aren't you?
Serena Williams?
Yes.
Bitch.
Yes, exactly right. How very fucking dare you?
I can't.
She just casually drops names.
How are you just going to do it so casually? I hate you. That's sickening, though.
She, you know, when she's talking and she's like saying these things, she's like, Oprah and like Viola Davis. She's just in a movie with Viola Davis and they really connected. And they're like, oh, like Viola's so nice to her. The only name that she didn't drop that like I was expecting any second now was like Beyonce.
Right.
So, but you know, she's like, luckily I have people like Oprah and Anna Wintour to help guide me and Viola Davis. And I was like, oh my God, enough, bitch. We get
right,
it.
Right, I have to go.
So, no, she's everything. She deserves all the praise, though, because she's so talented. And 2018 is going to be a huge year for her. She's going to be making all of her big movie debuts. She's got so many movies in the work. Of course, you know, God only knows what's coming for her. She's so talented. And as you could hear in the interview, so nice. So I wish her nothing but the best. Of course, we wish her nothing but the best. And she was She was a true delight, but how dare you just name drop famous people?
How dare you?
Like, really famous people. So, I mean, not just, like, casually.
You could get an interview with Oprah if she got it like that. Shit. Or Serena. I'll take either of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of those things where she's just, you know, casually, naming off these people who...
Well, if she could casually send over one of those people to our way, lovely.
Yeah, well, shit. You know, it's funny because she said, she described them as, I think she said titans, like titans in the industry. And that is so true. Like, she's very fortunate that these people who, given their respective industries, are legitimately not even icons. They are like, they are the pinnacle of their respective industries. Anna Wintour, right. Of course, fashion. Oprah, of course, like the whole world, she owns it. Serena Williams, like, you know.
Right.
Legit, the only one she did not name drop in there, just real fucking casual like, is Beyonce. But I'm sure that, you know.
It's coming, bro. It's coming.
I'm sure it is, if it's not already there. So, but she deserves the best of it all. She was just a delight. And
wonderful.
I look forward to big, big things for her. Girl, she's going to be playing Harriet Tubman in an upcoming movie about the Underground Railroad.
Sickening. That's badass.
Yeah. So, she's
going to... Oh, my God.
Yep.
Does she say when it comes out?
She starts filming it in the end of January, and it will come out...
It's not even done being filmed.
Oh, no, it hasn't even started being filmed, as far as I know.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So, it was just announced early this year that she was going to be playing the Harriet Tubman role. And, you know, I mean, it's such a good interview. Like, I'm so glad that we were able to do it. And she was so accommodating. I mean, she's in Japan, and it was really cool because sitting face to face with somebody on FaceTime or on Skype where you can actually see their responses. The thing I love, like, we're kidding here at Pearl about, you know, her just name-dropping these people. But it was obvious when you ask her the questions about what the hell. Like, you could tell that from her response that it is not even real to her yet. That she's sitting here saying, well, you know, Oprah will just email me and say, like, girl, this is what you need to do. You know?
My God.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's always very rewarding that it just hasn't quite...
I want Oprah to tell me what to do.
Well, I mean, she's all, and you get some breasts, and you get some hips,
right.
And you get some... Anyway. Well, Pearl, what are your plans on Christmas? Are you going to come by Casa Del Mar?
I'm going to try to swing by. I know I'm going to have a few friends swing by my place that aren't leaving the city. I'll probably spend some of it with my little brother because he'll be here. But yeah, I'm going to definitely try to make it over there. Do you have anything on your wish list this year?
I really don't. Like, my wish list is... not stuff that anybody could actually, you know, my wish list is pretty simple. I had some things that I wanted to accomplish in 2017 that I didn't get to professionally wise. And I'm hoping that 2018 will allow that opportunity.
Okay. So that sounds more like New Year's resolutions. I'm talking about Christmas gifts.
No, like, I don't consider those New Year's resolutions, because I think of New Year's resolutions as, like, I'm going to lose weight, which I am going to lose weight, and that's a New Year's resolution. But, you know, like, I just want to continue to prosper, and my Christmas gift to myself every single year is this party. Like, making, you know, surrounding myself with people and love and happiness on Christmas Day is my gift to myself. And the gift that I really want... for others, besides, you know, the joy that comes from attending my party and things like that, is I want people to go and donate to my sock drive. It ends a couple days after Christmas, and some of the donation locations are experiencing lower than usual donations. So I really would love for people to get out to the places of my donations and drop off some socks, toiletries, and underwear for the homeless. And in terms of what, like, girl, I've got everything I could possibly want, you know? Like, really, what more do I need? Like, there's nothing that I need. And so, for me, that's why just the happiness of, you know, people and spending the holidays with people I care about and enjoy being around is the gift for myself. What about you? Mm-hmm. What's your Christmas wish?
Well, I want hips. I want ass. I want ass and hips. I would love a raise. What else? That's about it.
Well, if you are naming things like ass and hips, bitch, I want dick. I want a big dick. I want it to... I want it fucking stuffing my stockings on Christmas Eve, the day after Christmas, New Year's Eve, into the new year. I would like it to stick around long enough to be fucking stuffing my stockings on my birthday at the end of January. St. Patrick's Day is a good day for a big dick. Fucking Arbor Day, bitch, show me the wood. Come through. Now, if we're talking about things like that...
God, show me the wood.
Oh, on God. Arbor Day, bitch. Show me the wood on Arbor Day, motherfucker.
Go in, bitch. I'm rooting for you. Shit. You need it, girl.
You know I do, bitch.
That's really true.
I like, you know, I need something to, you know, just a little wake-up call there.
Just a little wake-up call. Just a little one. Oh, my God.
All right. Girl, I think that's going to just close us down right now. Let's just close down shop.
All right. Well, you guys heard it here. Don't forget to follow us and like us on Facebook and on Twitter at Party Foul Radio.
That is correct. And if we do not see you between now and Christmas Day on Monday, happy holidays to all of you. And whether you are Christian and celebrate Christmas or you're Jewish... or you celebrate Kwanzaa or the Passover or whatever it is, you know, it is not about any specific holiday. What it is about seasonal cheer that we are, you know, hoping for you and all of yours from us and all of ours. So,
yeah.
A big multi-denominational season's greetings to you.
Yes.
From Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
We'll catch you soon. Bye.
It's over. She's the one.
Girl, you better.